Honey and everybody, welcome back to the Mawa Dissing Show. This is Nicole Bukinage.
And I'm Shirley Nordrum.
And today we are going to talk about seed saving.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to attend a week-long Seed Keepers conference. It was held down in Shakopee. And it was hosted by Native Seed Search, who is a company in the Southwest. And they have been saving and growing out seeds for some time now. And working with Rowan White, who's Haudenosaunee seed keeper, and she has a small farm in California, about 10 acres. So it was hosted by Native Seed Search, and it was co-taught by Joy from Native Seed Search and Rowan White.
That's considered a small farm?
10 acres? Yeah, that's small. Why do you think that's big? It's really cool. Her farm is really cool because it's in the foothills. You know, they still get a little bit of snow and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But what's really cool about their farm is they got their land at a reduced rate or whatever. It was cheaper because it's hilly. Mm-hmm. And what they did is they used the hills to terrace their gardens. So they actually got a really lots of land to garden on when it was land that, you know, wasn't as... what other people were looking for, but it works for them. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice because, you know, out in California with hoop houses and greenhouses and things like that, she can pretty much garden year round. So, right. You know, what might take us 3 years to do and grow out a seed, she can do in a year's time. So it really works well for her to be out in California.
It's a way of life, sounds like.
Oh, for sure it is for her. It was really cool because she is such an amazing teacher because she's doing this for so long that she has built seed keeping into her life so much that she can tell stories while she's teaching you about what she's doing or how it relates to our culture. She's an amazing instructor. And it's so much a part of their life that her children... I don't know their ages, but she showed us pictures of her kids and talks about them all the time. And they're maybe, I don't know, seven around there. And they keep a lot of seeds. They know how to keep seeds. And when they clean out fruit, they'll be at a friend's house, you know, eating something that has seeds. And they're looking at her like, Mom, where's the seed bowl? You know,
yeah.
Just like you teach children to recycle and then they start looking for the bin. They're looking for the seed bowl. Where do I put my seeds? It's that important to them. So much a part of their life. And that's a really amazing thing, you know, to have young children knowing that I should be keeping these seeds. So the workshop itself was so amazing. It was really an honor to be there. There were 9 nations there that I can remember. There was a woman there from Hawaii. And it was quite interesting because she also teaches at their language immersion school. So she knew some people from our community. Because
small world.
I know. Is that cool? We like knew the same people. So there was like these connections right away. I made a really good friend from Umatilla out in Oregon.
Yep.
And it was really cool. There was a secretary treasurer representative there from a tribe over in Michigan.
That's cool.
So to know that there's that level of interest in seed keeping and changing our diet and regaining food security and sovereignty.
There were some young adults there too.
There were 3 young men there. You know, the youngest guy was 14.
And, wow.
There was a 15-year-old there. And the other guy is like a junior or something in college, you know, 20-something young men there. Seed warriors.
Yep. Absolutely. That's cool. That's really young to be interested in seeds.
It is. And we got to talk to each other, you know, maybe a talking circle type style or whatever about why this was important to them. And the youngest one said that, you know, initially he wasn't that interested. He thought it sounded kind of interesting. So he wanted to go. But as the days went on and he learned so much, he stated that he more or less said he is getting a passion for it, that he felt really excited about it, that he wanted to actually go home, get his hands in the dirt and start doing it and learn more because it became so interesting to him throughout the week.
I wish I could have went.
Yeah, I wish everybody could go. in the way that Rowan taught it and gave us all the materials that she used to teach the course, she's hoping it's like a train-to-trainer. And so Simone Senegals and I went down, and we're hoping to have workshops. We don't think that we're going to do it week-long because that's hard for people to have that much time. Mm-hmm. But we're going to break it up and teach it in different sessions throughout the summertime into the fall and try to share as much as we learned. But we're by no means the expert that that Rowan is, you know. And I'm hoping when we look at some of the slides that we can, it will trigger some of the stories that she was able to tell.
Yeah.
As a, you know, seed keeper of many years.
Well, that's a good way to learn too, you know, is somebody might attend and know a little bit more about one area about it. About keeping seeds and saving them. And it's how we learn.
It is. And, you know, I had some ideas. I'm just going to share them with everybody now because I'd like to see these ideas maybe come to life. And that she was sharing how one of her friends is grows nothing but zucchini. I think it's called a black beauty zucchini or something like that. And so he has like 7 acres of zucchini that he grows out. This is a pure heritage zucchini that he's growing out. And so he has a lot of seed to process. And so when you put like seeds in water, it's usually it is the good ones that sink. The good ones are heavy and they sink, and the light ones float and you can get rid of them easier.
Is that for any seeds?
Yes.
That's an interesting thing to know.
It is. So what he did was because they're up in the foothills of California, this is where people were mining gold, right? Mm-hmm. So he built little seed sloughs. You know how when you filter out the sediments and stuff and you're trying to get the gold to come out, you built like this little trough with these little sections, and then you run water through it and you get your gold out that way. This is how he collects his good seeds. He has these troughs, these sloughs, and he puts all this seed in there. And then the ones that aren't viable, the ones that won't grow, just kind of flow over those little dams and go out, and then he takes the seeds that aren't viable, and I don't know what he does with those, but then he pulls out the little shoots and he has all the good seed that's going to grow for the next year. So what kid would not love seeing that, right?
Yeah.
So I was thinking, what if we had a small, you know, Leech Lake pumpkin patch? What if we grew out pumpkins and all the kids got to come and get their pumpkin? You don't have to pay for a pumpkin anymore. Yep. And then you save seed as they clean them out. They save seed and they learn about these things, you know, as you do this with them around, you know, that time of the year. I was thinking that's kind of a cool idea.
It's a really cool idea.
And we have a Leech Lake pumpkin patch.
And you get kids that know how to grow pumpkins.
Exactly. Then, you know, the leftover stuff, even after the seeds, and you could bring the pumpkins back. We could use them for compost.
Yep.
People like that have free-ranging chickens or fowl like we do, that can go for food. There's a lot of different things that you could use from the leftover jack-o'-lantern as well.
Yeah.
Because I think we want to teach our youth that this is about food, but how do you get them to the point where they're interested in it for food? And what kid doesn't like making a jack-o'-lantern?
True.
We could actually breed our own variety of Leech Lake pumpkin. After you grow seed out, you could get a strain, and after like 7 years... After 7 years, I guess this is kind of the number. If you've been a keeper of a variety for 7 years, you can kind of give it your own name.
Really?
And so this makes it challenging as you're trying for groups like Native Seed Search and Seed Savers Exchange, which is in Decorah, Iowa, another group that grows out a lot of seed. It makes it very hard for them to find the stories and the connections to where all the seeds come from. Because after a family's kept that for 7 years, they might give it their own name.
Mm-hmm.
So I go get seed from you. I might get the Bacanaga seed, which is might be the same thing as the Norgem seed, but we've been keepers of that for so long that that's what they call that. So it makes it a little bit challenging as you're trying to collect seeds and catalog seeds and grow out varieties of what's really what.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So we could
have really, really put a twist to those names.
You can. Rowan was talking about trying to get some, I can't remember what variety. Oh, it was a Mohawk red corn, a red sweet corn. And she was going to different people and collecting seed, and how the seed looked so much different and how it all had their own family names attached to it.
Yeah.
And so now she's she collected a lot of seed, grew a lot of plants, and is saving seed from them. So now she has like one, you know, variety that's more pure than those other varieties, because seeds change. If you know, if you're keeping seeds over there in Bemidji and I'm keeping seeds over there at my house, we're going to have different practices. We're going to save different kinds of seeds. Different things are going to look different to us. And so what she found is, what she was working with was a calico corn, a calico flint. And so that was, there were different colors in there. Some people liked different shades of the colors. And so now she has this pure variety that's of a color that she likes.
Yeah. So let's say I grow Bear Island corn for 7 years and I keep those seeds. Is that something that, I mean, in that case, is it's something that's been around for thousands of years, right?
Right.
I mean, is that something, Nicole Buckinago Bear Island corn. You know what I mean? That's just not right.
Well, I think that now that we know these things and we're trying hard as a people to save our seeds, that we may not call things like Bear Island corn, give it our own name. Yeah. Because we know that we're keepers of something that's very special to Leech Lake. So why would we change that?
Right.
You know? But back in the day, you know, no one really realized that what was going to happen, what was the future of seeds, that someday it may become hard to find these seeds, or that these seeds might even be gone in some cases.
Yeah.
Or that big corporations were trying to own seeds and that we couldn't have them. So not knowing the future, we probably didn't think about that when we gave them those names. Now we know that.
And I wonder what, like, what we call Bear Island corn now, like our ancestors, and say, oh, this is Bear Island corn. Right?
Yeah.
They called it something in Ojibwe. So it's just...
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is really interesting.
It strikes interesting thoughts. So how do you save seeds?
Well, it depends on what you're growing. It's very challenging, and I'm by no means an expert. I'm like in my scooching infancy stage of learning anything about seeds. But you know, if you want to be a beginning seed saver, there's different levels of seeds saving. There's easy seeds to keep. That'd be like the self-pollinating things like peas and beans and peppers and tomatoes and eggplants. Mm-hmm. Those kind of things are easier seeds because they're self-pollinating. That's kind of self-explanatory. They pollinate themselves. So it's easier to keep a pure strain of them. So mm-hmm. you can grow them out. You don't need to grow as many. Maybe 25 plants saved for seed will give you a nice batch of seed to continue growing. Then there's your medium seeds. Those are biennials. So they only flower and seed out in that second year. And I didn't even know about that when I went down there. Like carrots. If you're going to save carrot seeds, that first year you plant them, you don't harvest them. You let them grow out. And then you collect the seed the second year. So those are, you know, a little bit more difficult. And they can cross-pollinate. So if you have different varieties of carrots growing near each other and you don't have enough distance between them, you'll get some crosses there, some hybrids, and they won't be a pure strain. Right. And then there's your really difficult, more advanced seeds like corn. Corn is challenging to grow. There's corn, broccoli, cauliflower, cucumbers, and squashes. Those kind of plants are a little bit harder to grow. Because they're wind pollinated, and so you can get some crosses in there. And so you have to think about the amount that you're going to grow and then these isolation distances that you have to have. So say I'm going to plant some Bear Island corn there at my house, and my neighbor, who's, you know, quarter of a mile away, plants a different kind of corn. There's that possibility of those strains crossing. And, you know, what if he's growing a sweet corn?
Right.
Suddenly, I don't have my pure Bear Island corn anymore. So that's, you know, more advanced and challenging to think about. How do I keep these corn seeds safe and pure? And so, you know, in that case, if my neighbor was doing that, I'm lucky because I don't have anybody growing anything near me. But if he was, I'd have to, you know, get really advanced in my techniques and cover my ears of corn when the silks start coming out, and cover the tops and collect the pollen, and then self-impollinate them myself. so that they didn't cross out. And so that's why it's just harder to do. So if you're starting seed saving, you know, start with something simple like beans.
Tomatoes.
And then learn and advance from there. And you know, tomatoes, they do say that they're easy, but there's some technicalities in there, and that tomato seeds need to ferment before that they will become viable to germinate. And so, you know, when you open up your tomato and you have all those that jelly gooey kind of stuff mm-hmm. in the middle with all the little seeds there, when you scoop those out, you have to put them in some place where they will ferment for a few days and then wash them, or else they won't be viable to germinate. Oh. So I don't really think that's easy. And in fact, a friend of mine that was there, and he's been seed keeping for a few years now, he just bought a book called The Art of Fermentation.
That's nerdy, huh?
It's very nerdy, but I want
it. Very interesting.
It's on my wish list. Because I think
next to the lottery. Yeah.
Lottery first, Art of Fermentation book second.
Leech Lake Directory phone book third. Yeah,
definitely third. So, yeah, I hope to learn more about that. And it's all a learning process. And I'm hoping that people can get excited and learn with me. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, everybody that went to the class is so excited about it to go home. And we were kind of talking about that. You know, we are so excited about what we learned. And, you know, we want people to keep seeds. And you just hope that when you go home and you have your workshops and you start doing this, that there is that level of excitement. So mm-hmm. when we start having them, look for them and check them out, because it's pretty interesting stuff.
So how do you, once you obtain the seeds, what is the storing process for that for the following year?
That can get pretty technical. And, you know, obviously we'll cover that more in the workshops, because it is quite detailed. But the thing of it is that we have to remember that there was an elder there that come visited the class, and I liked what he said. He said that, you know, we've been saving seeds ever since we started eating, and we've been eating a long time.
Yeah.
So it doesn't need to get technical. Nowadays people want to talk about, you know, having freezers with hydrometers and you know, what if the electricity goes out? We mm-hmm. were seed keepers and we kept seed without this. So it's a process of drying them the right way to the right stage, and then just storing them in the dark at a nice even temperature, about 40 degrees or something like that. But I did talk to a seed keeper from Canada who actually did just save them under her bed. And she did some germination tests, and she was getting, you know, anywhere between 60 to 80% germination with just storing them under her bed after 5 years. So it isn't all that technical.
Yeah.
It's something that we can do. And, you know, storing containers, you can use glass jars. You can use paper envelopes. You can use whatever it is that you have at your disposal. It doesn't need to be something hard and expensive.
A lot of times we overcomplicate things.
We do.
But at the same time, our people are very complex people. You know, they're simple. They live simple lives, but they're very complex in the way that which they did things and preserved.
Right.
It's interesting, though. It's very interesting. And people talk about, without refrigerators and freezers and, you know, and that question came up when we were talking about sugaring. And they were talking about, it must have been difficult carrying around syrup. And I said, we didn't really make too much syrup. In fact, we focused on sugar because it was easy stored and it went a longer ways. Right.
We didn't have syrup, like that.
Yeah.
And then there's also an interesting conversation around the seeds is about, you know, what did we eat? Food literacy, understanding what we eat. And what tastes good. I was listening to a radio show the other day, and they were talking about another tribal nation, and it is a large nation, and they had like grocery stores all around the perimeter, kind of similar to what Leech Lake is. We got one grocery store and grocery stores around the perimeter, and the grocery stores were saying that they were carrying foods for that nation's palate, what they liked, and they were carrying things like Spam and hash. Well, that's not a traditional palate.
Yeah.
You know, we have changed what we appreciate as far as flavor and taste over time as our food sources have changed. And so what is a traditional, you know, Leech Lake Ojibwe palate? What is that? And we talked about that some more when a gentleman came in and talked about corn. And so the Bear Island is a flint corn. We would make hominy and flour and things like that with that corn. I'm not saying we didn't grow sweet corn here. We probably did, but the older varieties of sweet corn only have about 15% sugar content to them. And so as people started growing food in mass and you're trying to sell it and, you know, cater to what people enjoy, breeders of plants realized that the more sugar content there was, the better that sold. Until they bred sweet corn to the point where now it's called a super sweet. Mm-hmm. And they can have anywhere from 50 to 75% sugar. And,
wow.
You know, if you have diabetes, you've just taken a very healthy food and, you know, through plant breeding have changed it to a point where it's not healthy for you anymore.
Right. Not to mention the GMOs. And
that's even if it doesn't have GMOs in it. You know, this could be a organic variety of super sweet.
Really?
That was just bred to be that sweet. You can select characteristics that you like in your food and breed to get those characteristics.
Yeah.
And not have any genetic modification of that. So.
But most of our people get their corn from Walmart or
the grocery store. And then you don't know. I don't think that there's any labeling laws out there about.
Not yet. No.
GMO or anything like that.
It's actually
so.
A current.
Yeah.
Workings with the state and.
I think you could actually even have organic food that was GMO. Mm. It's the organic is talking about the conditions it's grown in.
Yep.
So I'm pretty sure you probably could have
to be safe.
Something organic that may be genetically modified. It's a possibility. I'm pretty interested. I'm ordering some sweet corn, an old variety of sweet corn. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's blue. It's a purpley dark blue color.
Mm.
And it's an 80-day, so it's nice grower for our bioregion. And being that it's an old variety, it will have less sugar content. But I think that people are going to enjoy it because there's a couple of unique characteristics to it. One, it's probably one of the only corns that could be grown in a container. You know, if you have like one of those, a drum or something like that out there, you could grow this corn in a container. And most corns won't grow that way. The other kind of cool thing is about it, when you boil it, it changes color from that dark blue to kind of a more, I can't think of a color blue, like an aqua blue.
Aqua.
Yeah, so it changes color. So I think that that's going to, you know, maybe interest some youth that, wow, my corn changes color. This is kind of cool.
So when you grow that, how tall does it get then?
I think it said it was 6 to 7 feet.
It's about a normal height then, huh?
Some corn is really tall these days, you know, like 9 feet tall, but this is a shorter corn in height.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know how many ears it grows. Different corn varieties produce different amounts of ears on the stalk. Winona LaDuke gave my sister some pink lady corn, and she was going to plant it, and then she didn't plant it. And she was talking to another friend of ours that had planted his pink lady corn last year. And he said, wow, I didn't know that when I planted that corn only produces one ear per stalk. Mm-hmm. And I only had 25 stalks, so I had 25 ears of corn. And so I saved that corn then for seed so that I could grow up more again later. And my sister was kind of surprised because she didn't know that either. And she had about a similar amount, like 25. And so she's actually, I think, going to grow her corn someplace else because I'm growing my corn. So they need to grow in different places so they don't cross over.
And then she's just going to keep those and...
Probably.
Try again next time. Yeah.
I think we have some friends that have some land and, you know, I haven't approached them yet, but I think if they hear what we're doing and what we're trying to do, that they might give us small patches of area to grow some corn on their land.
So if you guys did that, cross-pollination travels a long ways. Wind pollination?
Actually, the guy that was an expert in corn said that it could travel 2.5 miles. I actually think it could, under right conditions, travel further up to 5 miles. Very similar to what we've studied with our wild race. That's a far distance.
That is very. So if you guys are growing your two different corns on the property, I mean, and corn is wind pollinated, how does...
Well, I don't think she's going to plant her corn this year. I'm only planting my corn.
Okay.
So I don't know what we're going to do next year, if we're going to draw straws to see who gets to plant their corn, or if I'll just be nice and say, go ahead and grow your pink lady corn.
Get the pink lady corn going.
Yeah. Well, it's important to have all of them, to maintain all of them.
So when you're growing sweet corn and flint corn, what's the difference? How much ears per stalk do you get with flint corn then? Do you know offhand?
I don't know. I think different varieties, like, you know, Bear Island might have so many, and we'll find that out. I don't know. I don't know if I can look that up or if I'm just going to find that out when they start growing.
What is the growing period of... the sweet corn, for Bear Island sweet corn, do you know?
It says 60 to 80 days.
60, okay. And then, I'm just curious because that's the one that I'm going to experiment with this summer. And they're planted. I'm just going to
take care of them?
Yeah. I'm going to really put a lot of attention in that they need, you know?
I think it's it's just a learning experience for all of us. And I think it's just exciting to have a collective community learning experience, you know.
Yep.
There are some folks in our community that are good gardeners, and we can talk to them. We have lots of resources at our fingertips. You know, Rowan White has said she's, a phone call or a Facebook message away, and we'll just learn as we go through it. And it's going to be fun to go through it as a community and sharing what we learn and recognizing each other's gifts. You know, some people are probably going to have really, really skilled agricultural skills, things you're just good at, I have a feeling I'm not going to be the good agriculturalist.
That's what I'm afraid of, especially with the seeds that I have. They're very important.
They're very
that we do this properly, and with the utmost respect,
that's right. And if we do it right, if we do it that way, even maybe we won't make mistakes. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure mistakes will be made, and we'll just learn from those.
We gotta start somewhere.
We do.
So before we go here, wrapping up a few minutes here, for somebody who's listening, if they're, new to gardening and they're thinking about seed saving after this harvest, is there any resources out there as far as material, like books and materials, that you would personally recommend? Or if somebody is trying to buy heritage seeds, if somebody that's so beginner, where do we go? How do we do this?
Seed Savers Exchange is a very reliable company. They do not have Bear Island Flint corn, but they do have tons of varieties of heirloom or heritage seeds, and they're in Decorah, Iowa, and they're really reasonable. So for every source other than Bear Island Flint corn, they are who I would go to buy my seeds right now. And I'm sure there are others out there. It's just going to take a matter of, doing your due diligence when you're researching that. I'm not promoting them or anything, but they're the one company that I do know of that's local, mm-hmm. and has seeds for our area. And then, I think that there's a number of good books out there, and I don't know the names of them right off the top of my head. But if you just look up seed saving and you start looking at the books, there's this one book that has a bunch of seeds on the cover of it. They're like in little cubby holes or something like that. It's like the Seed Savers Catalog or something like that. That's a really good one. I should have had a list prepared to do that. But, I think I would just call the Leech Lake Tribal College and talk to, either one of us. And we'll get a list of resources.
I will recommend you talk to Shirley, because I'm just as lost as anybody listening. I'm so new to this. Like I said, I've been gardening for, 3 short, pitiful years?
Yeah.
But I started somewhere, and we started with just a couple of tomato plants. We had green peppers and cucumbers. And so we're branching off, and we had so much tomatoes the past few years.
You're lucky. A lot of people didn't have good tomatoes last year.
Well into September, they were still growing.
So maybe you have a green thumb.
They were growing like crazy.
Perfect.
And I'm just like, we're going to cut the amount of tomatoes we're growing in half this year.
Yeah.
And then we have onions, potatoes. Potatoes I'm a little bit worried about. I don't know why.
Potatoes are pretty easy to grow.
Then we got green peppers. We have onions. We have cucumbers. And then the Three Sister Garden.
I picked up a pack of cucumbers. It was just really cool. They were yellow with kind of orange stripes around them too.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was like, wow, this is a crazy looking cucumber. And I was just eyeing up that seed pack at the store we were at.
Like Tiger?
Yeah, and I was just all like so excited about it, and I didn't have any money to buy it. And that guy goes, "You think those are pretty cool, huh?" And I was like, "Yeah, these are really cool cucumbers." And he goes, "You can have that pack of seeds." And I think that's maybe even a good message to end with, in that we want to start a seed library.
Yep.
So growers can bring in their seeds and we can share and exchange and grow out and learn from each other. And that seeds, they should be a public commodity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that you should have to buy your seeds. And that's why we're moving this way. They should be, they're a gift to us and we should be gifting them to. So whenever possible, right. I understand that some people put a lot of work into growing their seeds and breeding pure strains and taking care of them. And maybe they need to be compensated. But I know that those seed growers also give seeds away.
Yep.
And so that's a cool message to end on, is that the seeds are there for us to grow good food and healthy food.
Right. And that's what it's about. Well, that's going to wrap up our show today. Miigwech bizhin da wig, Minawa.